North Idaho News of the Week is brought to you in part by Evergreen Realty, commercial and residential property listings. Online at evergreen-realty.com.
Good morning. Welcome to the North Idaho News of the Week here for September 5th. I'm the guy on the microphone one today, Chris Bessler, and I'm joined by Sandpoint Reader editor Zach Hagedorn. Zach, thank you for being here.
Thank you. Good morning.
And we have a lot of stuff to touch base on. Of course, the news never stops, but at the top of the show, I'm going to do a shout out to a couple special listeners we have today. Pepper and Wren Bessler, as I understand, are listening as we speak here. So be careful what you say. My granddaughters are listening.
Well, I'll keep it a family show.
Yeah. So I'm going to jump into the news, and then we're going to come back and dissect a few of these, Zach, that you reported on this week. After almost 3 weeks, the Sunset Fire now is 100% contained. It ended up with a size of 3,230 acres before it got contained. They're still doing mop-up operations there. Our other big fire in the area is the Lightning Creek Fire, and it's, I don't know how contained it is, but it's not been growing. It's at 2,525 acres. The air quality is kind of crummy out there. You may have noticed that, Zach, on your way in. Looking at the air now reports around the lake, it's at yellow, which is moderate, but there are a few spots in East Hope, and Clark Fork that are in the orange, which means that's unhealthy for sensitive groups. They should take precautions and reduce their outdoor activity. So watch out for that if you have sensitivities that way. Other news, ITD is gearing up for a six-week-long Long Bridge construction project that's going to be focused on removing raised joint edges to help lessen damage to the bridge by snow plows beginning the week of Monday, September 8th. That's this coming Monday. Crews will be working overnight for 6 weeks, setting up traffic controls each day at 7 p.m. and finishing their work by 6 a.m. in the morning. So drivers should expect the bridge to operate with only one lane at night during that period of time. Lake Ponderay is going to remain at the summer pool level, according to the Army Corps of Engineers, which is a little over 2,062 feet through Sunday, September 21st. And they'll then begin the gradual fall drawdown on September 22nd. They have a target height of 2,060 feet by September 30, and then down to 2,051 feet no later than November 15th, where they anticipate holding the lake level during the kokanee spawning period of time there. Sad news for friends of and family of Rod Crawford. He was found drowned, apparently, in the lake. Shortly after the violent thunderstorm that passed through the area last Friday, his body was not found for a couple of days. And it's uncertain if it was the storm that he got caught up in. His boat was found but wasn't capsized after the storm. And a search was launched that evening, but it actually continued for a couple of days before they found his body a little bit north of the train bridge. Investigators think he might have entered the water for a swim, so it's uncertain if he was caught up in the storm or perhaps had another cause for drowning there. And did you know Rod?
Yeah, I grew up with the Crawfords. We used to go camp at Priest Lake when I was a kid.
Yeah.
So I've known Rod since I was probably 10 years old, something like that.
Yeah.
And he was very, very sad. He was a great guy.
Great guy. He was a family friend of ours as well. That was really shocking and sad news for our family. And moving on to other stories. So the deadline for candidates to file for office and be on the ballot in the November 4th elections, which are city and taxing district elections like the school districts, was last Friday. And in the Lake Pendere School District, only three candidates filed for the three open seats. For Zone 1, the incumbent Jalen Peters has filed. For Zone 3, the incumbent Lonnie Williams has filed. And for Zone 5, a new candidate, Molly Williams, has filed. If no one files by the end of today, 5 p.m. today, as a write-in candidate, those three open seats won't even appear on the ballot as they're uncontested seats. In the city of Sandpoint, there will be a contested race for city council. There are three seats up for election, and four candidates have filed for those three seats. Incumbents Joel Iceboro and Rick Haworth have filed for re-election, but two others, Joe Tate and Joshua Torres, have also filed. And basically, there's one open seat that's incumbent Justin Dick's seat. He didn't file for re-election. And the way that election works is the top three vote-getters among those four candidates will win the three open seats. It is still possible for a write-in candidate to file again today before 5 p.m., so there could still be another candidate roll in there. In other news, Maddox Farm Productions is joining with the Pendere Arts Council in a voting competition for a multi-year grant of up to $120,000 from the Levitt Foundation, and it would support the summer music series in Sandpoint that Maddox Farm puts on. The Levitt Foundation is a national social impact fund dedicated to music, public space, and community building. POAC and Maddox Farms are vying to become a finalist in for the grant, and everyone who appreciates the summer music series can help keep it going by going and casting a vote online from today at 10 a.m. until Monday, September 15th at 5 p.m., and you can do that if you go to Levitt, that's levitt.org/vote. So if you like that series, go to levitt.org/vote and cast a vote. Sandpoint City officials are inviting downtown business people to attend a meeting Monday, this coming Monday, September 8th, to hear a presentation and ask questions about the proposed paid parking policies for the downtown core district. The meeting will be at 8:30 a.m. at the Marigold Bistro, which is in the Sandpoint Center at 414 Church Street. It will include city staff discussing the proposal to install parking meters next year in sections of the downtown, as well as the overall effort to develop a downtown parking management plan. And everyone's invited to go to that. It's 8:30 on Monday at the Marigold Bistro. The Bonner County Commissioners and the County Planning Department will meet Tuesday, September 9th, to continue a hearing on a preliminary plat for the proposed Deerfield subdivision off of Baldy Road. Property partially abuts the city-owned property that houses the nonprofit Baldfoot Disc Golf Course. This hearing was continued from an August 14th meeting in order to solicit more information from the developers. Members of the public can attend that hearing in person at the Bonner County Administration Building or remotely via Zoom at bonnercountyid.gov/meetings. This proposed subdivision would convert 32.67 acres into 24 lots of between 1 and 3 acres each. If it's approved, the homes would utilize the Syringa Water District, but they'd have individual septic systems. The development has drawn opposition from a number of Baldy Road residents who contend that the density of that many septic systems stand to pollute Syringa Creek, which flows through the property, and would also impair the rural character of the area. And Zach, that's what I had for the main headlines. Is there anything you'd throw in? How about school started?
School started, yeah. this is the last day of the first week.
Yes.
And I've successfully navigated every day with the drop-off and pickup.
Yeah, you got a couple kids to curry around.
I got two schools to hit every morning, and the traffic gets harder and harder to navigate. So I got here today with about 5 minutes to spare. So that was pretty good.
Yeah.
Although I made the kids get up 10 minutes early so that we could
account
for the traffic.
Some margin there.
Right.
Yeah, you used that 5 minutes of that margin. So, yeah, well, I guess let's jump in on some of the stories that you reported this week, one of which was this bridge closure that's coming up for the Long Bridge starting Monday.
Right.
I got to ask, why is that bridge? Why is there such a big thump, thump, thump that happens when you go across that bridge?
Well, there's the joints, right, that are spaced periodically across the span. You know, it's like a 2 mile long span just about. And each section has a sort of a gap between it with like sort of a metal kind of lip. And the joints are there so that the bridge can sort of expand and contract with weather conditions. And, you know, you wouldn't want like a 2 mile solid concrete span of a bridge because it wouldn't be very structurally sound.
It wouldn't handle our variation in temperature. Yeah.
So it's interesting to sort of think about the Long Bridge as a whole bunch of short bridges that are all kind of, you know, connected together, but have these gaps along the way. And that's where, when you're driving across, you know, you hear the thump thump of your tires, you know, going over those lips. And the project that they're talking about doing here, or are going to do, is they're going to shave down sort of the upraised portion of the metal parts on those joints so that it's more of a smooth sort of transition across that gap. They're not going to get rid of the gap because they want to maintain that ability for the bridge to sort of adapt to weather conditions and temperature changes.
Expand and contract.
Right. But they want to get the disruption of going over the joints to be a lot lessened. They're going to put some kind of epoxy sort of covering on there as well. And the point of that is that to do snow removal on the bridge, and you've got, you know, I guess it's county road crews going across there to keep it clear during the winter, which of course is critical for being able to get across that bridge year round. But as the plows come across, they hit those joints and that upraised portion, and it does damage, you know, to the plow. And those plows aren't cheap. I mean, every year we hear about, you know, plows getting damaged for whatever kind of reason, and then they always put a price tag on it. And it's always kind of like eye-watering how much it costs to fix those plows. So that's a kind of a cost-saving measure. I think there's also kind of an element of safety, maybe, to where, you know, for the drivers of the plows, and sort of like general public safety, making it easier to keep the bridge clear during the wintertime.
Yeah, and they say it's to help protect the plows, but it's got to damage the bridge.
Yeah,
when those plows hit it. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, every time you think about some kind of, I don't even know how heavy those things are, but multi-ton vehicles ramming into that lip, even if it's just, you know, a tiny bit of an inch or whatever, it's putting stress on the concrete. It's putting stress on where the joint is. So, I mean, it helps to preserve the integrity of the bridge too. But as I asked an information officer, I said, okay, well, tell me about, are we going to no longer hear the thump thump when you drive across the bridge? Because I think for a lot of us who have lived here for a long time, that's like, you know, your home when you hit the Long Bridge and you hear the first thump, sort of thump, thump,
thump.
And yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's a thing.
It's a thing, but it does seem like it's a bigger thing than it needs to be.
Right.
If the bridge was constructed a little differently,
sure,
it could alleviate that somewhat.
So that sound, I think, from what I understood from the ITD, the officials, is that it's probably still going to be audible, but it's going to be lessened. And we may not, you know, have that sound in our lives as much as we had in the past. But I think it's better to have a functioning bridge that stays clear of snow and, you know, we're not spending all this money on damaged snowplows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, folks, be aware of that. 6 weeks of construction if you have to go across the bridge. It's at nighttime.
Yes. And I should note also, it is going to be a lane closure, but this year, I mean, this has been three consecutive years that ITD's done mass, like big bridge work. And I think they said they've learned some lessons about how to control traffic and how to minimize the inconvenience for people. And, you know, there's also safety considerations. I mean, you got to get ambulances and fire trucks and things across the bridge. So rather than close the entire lane, throughout the project, they're going to stagger the closures in sort of sections so that you can weave your way across the bridge. And then they're going to control sort of the movements with flaggers. So you're not going to see like, this lane is open, this lane is closed. Everybody has to wait until the entire lane is, sort of moved across the bridge. Mm-hmm. And the whole point of that is so that people aren't having these huge waits and we're not backing up traffic, on either side of the bridge. So it's going to be hopefully a smoother transition between those staggered closure areas. Mm-hmm. And I think they're really hoping they're very clear that they're like, we don't want you to be angry at us. We know this is an inconvenience. So please, just realize that, we're trying to make this easier on everybody. They're also doing some accommodations for the school district, mm-hmm. where when we have home Sandpoint High School football games, they're going to start the work a little bit later.
Right.
So that people can get
your story. Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So people can get across the bridge, get to the game on time, mm-hmm. and all that. So that's another sort of like community accommodation that they've put in place this time around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Any word on how far along they are in the idea of building a second bridge?
Well, yeah, that was kind of that was big news last December when they announced that they're going to appropriate $200,000 toward doing an analysis for what that would even look like. And, of course, we hadn't really thought we were even going to be talking about building a second bridge for probably the rest of my lifetime. They were planning on not worrying about any of this until the bridge met its 100-year lifespan. And, it was built in 1981. So, that just didn't seem like it was anything we were ever going to have to deal with,
yeah.
or even talk about.
It ought to be another 50 years out. Right?
Yeah. But with all the work they've done over the past couple of years, they've really got that 1981, the vehicle bridge, pretty much up to snuff, right? And so now there was more talk of like, well, the pedestrian bridge, the one was built in the 50s, that's next to it. Maybe that could be replaced with two, I think it was northbound lanes. So the lanes that we currently drive on north and south would be southbound only, and then the pedestrian bridge would go away and a new span would be put in place that would only be two northbound. And so the analysis they're doing is like, what would this look like? How would we do a four-lane bridge that's 2 miles across? What kind of engineering would that entail, to, I guess, remove the 1950s bridge and then build a whole new one?
Or maybe possibly use the piers they have.
Yeah, I don't think they've done a project like this maybe ever. So there is a lot of planning that has to go into it. And this is, probably not something we're going to see in the next 5 years. But we're not going to be waiting another 50, or so, from what it sounds like. Mm-hmm. The big thing is the funding. They can plan all they want and do the analysis and everything like that, but this is going to be hundreds of millions of dollars to do this. It'd be one of the biggest engineering projects in the state history.
Yeah. The bypass was, I think, 110 or 120 million.
Something like that.
To build that.
This would be orders of magnitude bigger than that. Just for those two lanes, I think it was. They quoted me a number, but I'm trying to remember what it was. But yeah. Anyway, it was big. It was a heavy lift, and they're going to need to find, federal grants, they're going to need to find state appropriations. It's going to come from just huge basket of dollars to do that larger project. This project, the 6 week one, we'll probably forget about that in about 2 months, but the other stuff, is ongoing.
Okay. Well, let's talk about this city meeting that's coming up on Monday about downtown parking. And right. What are we going to learn new from that, or will we learn anything new from that, or is it just an opportunity for business owners to vent? Will it actually help shape the plan?
Well, I think there's a larger effort afoot. I don't know if they're going to bring any particularly new information to that meeting. It's geared specifically toward downtown business owners and building owners, so it's not necessarily being billed as kind of like a public forum. It's informational for the downtown core merchants, mm-hmm. and the people who own the buildings down here. So that's one thing. And it's going to be geared specifically, like I say, toward the parking meter proposal, which anybody who's been following the parking saga that we've had over the past 8-9 months or whatever, there is a plan afoot to put parking meters of some kind. We don't know what kind of technology. We don't really know what kind of rates. Like, it's all just conceptual, but the idea is to put parking meters on select parts of the downtown core, on like First Avenue and Second Avenue. So certain high intensity use blocks would have some kind of meter. And I think the city's trying to just kind of like make the case for why this is a good thing to do. And one of those cases is that it will encourage more turnover in those spaces. If people are like, they don't want to feed the meter. So they'll go in, do their business, get back in their car and leave.
And it'll theoretically open up more parking.
Right.
As you cruise through the downtown looking for a place to park.
Exactly. And I think the argument the city has made and probably will make again at that meeting is that that gets more customers coming into stores. I think a lot of merchants are worried that it's going to disincentivize anybody mm-hmm. from going downtown. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I mean, there's probably some middle way on that argument. I don't know. I don't have a dog in the fight. I just report on it. But it's also interesting to note that we did have parking meters throughout downtown for a very long time.
Yeah, up until 50s and the 60s.
Yeah. And they were taken out, I want to say, in the late 80s. Mm-hmm. So it's not necessarily a new concept for us, but it's bringing it back and making the case for why now is a good time to do it. I think Community and Planning Development Director Jason Welker is going to be there for sure. And I think that the reason they're doing this meeting and the way they're doing it is to feed the larger kind of public awareness piece of mm-hmm. everything that they've been trying to do. I think they were a little stung with that wastewater treatment plant ballot language. They did a survey that showed there was a very low level of trust mm-hmm. among citizens for the city to use money wisely. And I think that though that was directed at the wastewater treatment plant, I think they sort of sat up a little bit and it's like, wow, that sentiment probably isn't just for this. It could be for other things. Mm-hmm. So they're very sensitive to like, we need to go out and do outreach and explain everything that we're doing as much as we can and as clearly as we can so that people aren't kind of, you know, coming up with their own interpretations of what the plans are and the timeline for everything. So I don't know. It's a purely an outreach thing. And I don't know that there's any hardcore vote planned for this in the near future. I know that at one of the past meetings, Mayor Jeremy Grimm sort of indicated that the full parking management plan itself, which would incorporate the meters and permits mm-hmm. and paid parking at, you know, various city-owned parking lots, that whole project, they're hoping to have finished in the next 5 to 6 months. So in terms of this being imminent, I don't think there's any push to do this as quickly as possible, which is why they're kind of doing info sessions and things. Mm-hmm. And it's probably not the last one they're going to do. I mean,
And the parking making meter technology will be the modern technology, right? It won't be a meter at every single space. It'll be a place where you go and put your money in.
It could be. I mean, they haven't really identified any kind of technology for this, but some of the ideas they've floated, just to give folks an idea, and I hope that they'll present some of these sort of technology concepts at this meeting so that we can get a good picture of what we potentially could see. But in past meetings and presentations, they've sort of pointed to things like you put a meter on, like one on each block, and the technology itself knows all the spaces on that block or section of the block. You go to it as kind of like a central kiosk mm-hmm. and you can pay, you know, with like a tap with your card. You could do it on your phone. Like, I don't know. I mean, there's a ton of ways you can do it. It's not going to be like walking out there and throwing 50 cents in or something like that.
Right. You're not going to have a pocket full of quarters.
I think we're past that. I mean, we're mostly cashless and we're definitely coinless, I think, in most cases. So it will be some kind of sort of wireless technology, I'm sure. Mm-hmm.
So on the topic of the city, not reported on this week, you mentioned the ballot language.
Right.
Have they actually ironed that out yet?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They have. Okay. Have you gotten a copy of the actual ballot language? Because I queried the city and they said, well, that's going to be released on the 5th or the 8th, the ballot language. I didn't get a copy of it myself.
So in the staff report for, I want to say it was the last meeting of the council, the weeks get kind of jumbled up in my mind sometimes, especially since I often can't report a meeting immediately after it happens because they've been going on for, you know, 4 or 5 hours sometimes. But it was at a very recent council meeting where they dealt with all the ballot language, and in the staff report that's attached under the agenda on the city's website, there are examples of the ballot language in there. And it's, you know, it's fairly boilerplate from my perspective. I mean, it indicates that they're going to go out for authority to raise $130 million. That's the ceiling of what they can try to get under the ballot language. Doesn't mean that they're going to get that, and it doesn't mean that the city of Sandpoint ratepayers are going to pay $130 million. It's just it gives them the authority to go out for grants, loans, whatever sources of funding they can find, and they can't go above $130 million. Mm-hmm. So that's what that means. And I think a lot of people saw that number and they kind of freaked out and was like, well, we're not going to spend $130 million on this thing. Like, I'm not voting for that, but mm-hmm. It isn't like one of these sort of like 1% taxes or something like that, where we do commit to, you know, raising that exact amount of revenue from that exact source. This is just bonding authority. Mm-hmm. So that's a distinction, I think. And the ballot language, as I recall, does sort of point that out. And it stipulates all the things they're going to use it for if they get that. And it's,
they're going to have to do a lot of education
prior
to the vote on that if they want to get that point across.
Right. Well, and, you know, if we think we've had a lot of meetings about parking, you know, expect to see a ton more outreach on that wastewater ballot measure. And they have a plan. They have a whole media strategy that they've got figured out. They're going to launch a website that's dedicated just to that project. Mm-hmm. With hopefully some maps, you know, and some sort of analysis of what all specifically we need to do at the plant and why. They're going to have mailers. There was talk of, you know, inserting something in people's utility bills. There's two open houses, from what I recall, that they're planning in the next couple of months. Because they have to do this, like, by November.
Right.
So.
Yeah. They have 2 months.
Yeah.
And actually, one day less than 2 months as of today, since the election is November 4th.
So we're gonna see a ton of activity coming out of City Hall to get the word out about exactly what that ballot measure is and what it is not, and why they think that people should know how important it is. They have to be really careful about not going out and sort of like stumping for it in their official city positions. And there was talk about that at one of the past meetings, too, where they were trying to put the guardrails on, like, you can't use your city position or your city resources to go out and, like, advocate for it. You can go out and educate.
Can't the elected officials advocate? And it's the staff, the city staff.
The city staff isn't allowed to do any of that. Yeah. And the elected officials, you know, they were cautioned to sort of, like, not use their city positions to do that. I mean, they can do it as private citizens all they want.
Right. Right.
And I'm sure that if you bumped into an elected official in the grocery store or something and asked them, you know, what's up with this ballot thing, they would probably give you the arguments.
And that's assuming all the elected officials are on board with it, too.
Yeah. I mean, there was a little concern, I think, during the process of figuring out the number that we were going to go out for and the timeline and all this kind of thing. So, I mean, there was some trepidation, I think, among some of the council members about doing that full $130 million ask. But ultimately, they voted for it, you know, thinking that it was important to go with that bigger number. And the other option was to go for, I think it was $81.3 million or something like that, $80 million. So that was like sort of option B. And the discussion surrounding whether to do the $130 million or that $80 million was, well, the $80 million looks more attractive on paper because, you know, people aren't, we're going to, if we raise that money and ratepayers are on the hook for at least a portion of it, the rates won't go up that much comparatively. So they felt like it was probably more attractive on the surface, but when they drilled into it, they sort of came to the conclusion that would have been sort of the phase one portion of the project that would only deal with the most critical components at the treatment plant. And then who knows how long, maybe 10 years later, the city would have to come back for phase two. And in 10 years time or 5 years time or however long, I mean, who knows how much prices will increase for materials. So the phase two bond ask after the $80 million could have been twice that or something. I mean, so we were kind of, the argumentation went that we were sort of putting ourselves at risk a little bit if we went for that smaller amount, because we'd have to come back for another amount later, and it could be way more than we anticipate. So doing the $130 million ask right now was seen by the council to be more strategic, in that we can just sort of like deal with the whole project now and then not have to worry about the uncertainty of paying even more later. So, and that argument kind of carried the day, which is why we're going to see that on the ballot. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's an important thing. It's going to have to be addressed at some point.
Yeah, I mean, that survey that they put out was really interesting when you kind of dig into the specific questions and sort of like how people perceive the need. The vast majority of people who took that survey, and it was about 1,000 people, and it was just shy of 1,000, which is pretty good turnout for a survey. But it was like, it was a huge majority were aware of the issue, were concerned about it, felt like something really needed to be done about it to protect water quality in the river. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, sort of sustainability into the future. So, I mean, the public was very on board with the idea of repairing the wastewater treatment plant. The responses to the survey kind of balked, understandably, at the idea of paying for it, which is always the case. Yeah. I mean, everybody wants lots of nice things, but they don't necessarily want to pay for it, or they don't want to pay too much for it. So the support for the thing, for the ballot measure sort of like went down, as you might imagine, when people looked at $130 million. But then it went up again, slightly to, I mean, close to 30-40% or something like that, when the question on the survey was, would you support this $130 million, knowing that it was going to have higher rates, but also knowing that the city would aggressively pursue grants and low-interest loans to offset? Mm-hmm. That's when you saw the support kind of go up a little bit. And again, like I mentioned earlier, where it really kind of stung was the 11% of respondents said that they had confidence that the city would manage the funds well and manage the project well.
So 89% did not have that confidence.
Yeah. Well, to varying degrees. Yeah. You know, it wasn't just like, do you have confidence? Yes or no. Yeah. It was like, yes, no, a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, kind of, you know, there was a range. Mm-hmm. But the 11% that, you know, I don't know. It wasn't good. Mm-hmm. Well, Joel DeSpiro actually was like, you know what? We're in North Idaho. I'll take 11%. That's pretty good.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we have blown past the 8:30 hour here. Anything else that's newsworthy you want to bring up?
Sand Creek Regatta is tomorrow.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Our favorite junk boat race.
Yeah, and you're going to be out there paddling?
Yes. Sandpoint Reader publisher Ben Olson and I built a boat. A boat, quote unquote.
Out of what? Milk cartons.
Well, we had some scrap lumber, I guess, and we built a cage around some dock floats. Okay. And then wrapped the whole thing in some black plastic.
Yeah.
And we're...
So you're actually going for the prize here.
We have won that race more times than not. And we have, there's a silver cup, a big homemade silver trophy cup that has been sitting in our windowsill for a year. And this year we're hoping to get more than a couple of boats. I mean, it's usually been 3 boats, but having 5 would be great. And it's free to, I mean, all you gotta do is build a boat of some kind and bring it down.
So, and it's not too late. You can get working on that right now.
If you want to, I mean, we built a boat in one day a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
They don't have to be pretty. They just have, they just have to float.
And they aren't pretty.
No. I mean, we feel like ours is pretty trim. But we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see. The reader staff will be on that, and we'll see who wins. The race is mustering the boats is going to be at 10 a.m., and the race usually happens between 10:30 and 11, something like that.
Okay. So, and you don't have to have a boat. You can just come watch it.
Oh, yeah, spectators.
And have a laugh.
And many years past, we've had probably 5 times as many spectators as we have boats.
Yeah.
So it is, I mean, people get wet, you know, it's fun to watch a boat sink.
And it's supposed to be warm tomorrow.
I hope so. Yeah. Yeah. And the race is from the Bridge Street Bridge to Cedar Street Bridge and back.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That's a pretty short race.
Well, it's kind of like the Kentucky Derby, you know, it's like the most exciting 2 minutes of sport or something like that. Yeah. It takes longer than 2 minutes. Especially
minutes,
it's all human power.
It's short, but it's,
yeah,
it's lengthy
in
a way. Yeah. Okay, I want to throw out one more thing. Mention there is going to be a town hall, the Sandpoint Save Our Schools Town Hall. It's going to be next Thursday, September 11th at the Pondere Event Center. And it's a community conversation on the question, should your tax dollars go to private schools? And they have a number of panelists and a moderator from the Idaho, our moderator is Marcy Kerr. She's an Idaho educator and high school debate coach. So you might want to put that on your calendar if you want to get involved in school financing. And with that, Zach, I think we're going to sign off. Thank you for listening today. This is 88.5 KRFY. You've been listening to the North Idaho News of the Week, and we will be back again next Friday with a roundup of things going on in our town. And we're going to go to Otto's Eclectic Mix now.
Top of the line.